Now it is my privilege to introduce the next speaker. Please offer a warm Valley Group welcome to Sylvia.
All right, Sylvia.
A good start. Good evening. My name is Sylvia. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm a substitute. Whoever was supposed to speak tonight, I don't know if this is my lucky night or yours. But tell me after the meeting, okay? Now, the only thing I'm going to share with you is my own experience, strength, and hope. I'm not here to preach to you. I like what that man read in the first reader. He was right. More than anything, I want to give you hope, because you give me hope. Every man and woman sitting in here that came in through those doors and didn't have the opportunity to go through a recovery group first or a rehab program, and you're still here, that tells me this program works. And I have to have faith in this program that it does work for everyone, regardless of how you come in. Okay, I came in as desperate as a guy can be. I don't think you want to hear a drunk along. But I'm just going to tell you that I got my fourth drunk on the charge, and that's what got some of my attention. And prior to that, I fell down three flights of stairs, and I'm paying the price for that now. Ran to a fight with someone. It's usually a boyfriend or a girlfriend for most people, for me it's the same. And my leg was broken. I'm paying the price for that now too. It's funny how a lot of things that really happen to us when we're drinking, you will feel some of the repercussions years later on down the road. So those of you that are here tonight and you can do something about your drinking or drug use, you're doing yourself a favor. You stand a better chance. I was already 43, 44 years old, and that was 29 years ago, when I walked into the doctor's office and I knew I couldn't do this anymore. I was on the verge of losing my job. I come from Bakersfield, California. And I was being, the only way I could possibly hold my job was to transfer to somewhere in the Northern California area. Well, you have to be a resident of this county where it's going to cost over $3,000.
what?
I have all these receipts. All right, aren't I a resident? I've been living in a motel room for months. And he said, well, take that into consideration. So I left. And what I was doing was I was flying back and forth to this new job. And one day, I had my bag packed, and I told my friend, come take me to the airport. Take me to Fresno. He dropped me off at the alcoholic recovery center. When I got down there, I remember, I'll never forget that. I was walking up the steps crying. And that moment, what you expect. All I wanted to do was to stay out of trouble. But it wasn't because I wanted to stop drinking. I just wanted to find some way to live with alcohol and not get into trouble. Because the one thing I didn't want to do is I didn't want to give it up. There's a lot of people that are here. They didn't want to give up their addiction. So anyway, I arrived and they take me in immediately because they've been waiting for me. And the program, I started to listen a little bit. And I was very fortunate that we had a minister that would come out and do some, the Presbyterian minister that's over for a long time and donated a lot of time. He came in and read the big book to us. And we had a real rigid program here. It was AA all day long. And this is the good part, is that we held AA meetings in our venue, and everybody from outside the Fresno area that had ever gone to this program, or anyone else that wanted to stay sober, came through. And so we would sit in the back, but none of us were allowed to share. So I was brought up that way. We didn't have anything to share. So we listened to how the program was being conducted or how the meetings were being conducted. And not only that, but we had meditation. And something happened within those first 30 days. The obsession to drink was lifted. I no longer thought about drinking. The only thing I was concerned with as I was still obsessed with wanting to go home. I wanted to go back to my family. I wanted to go back to the way things were. I wanted to go back to my home. And it wasn't meant to be. So I go back to, after I get out of the recovery house, I go back to the Bay Area. And I walk into the, I walk up to my boss and I ask him, would you go through me into the sheriff's office? I didn't know what to do. He just fell apart. And then he said, and I said, and can you keep my anonymity? He said, yes. And then so that night when I got off work, he took me over to the sheriff's office, took my picture and stuff like that, and he took me over to the substation. And there I was. What I was going through. But what he did was he introduced me to other AA members and other NA members, because he knew we just had been to recovery. And he kept us in a quiet little place so that we wanted to talk to each other, we could. Because I worked with a group of people who I worked with Mormons, I worked with people that had never drank, I worked with men that had come out of the military, I worked with very well-educated, experienced people. And I thought, and here I am. I don't know anything about this new job. I don't know how to do it. My brain hasn't been working lately. And so what he did was he teamed me up with a guy. And so that's how I got help. It was in it took all the help they could give me there just to keep my job. And I just kept going. And then as I turned myself into the sheriff's office, I would get up every morning and fight for a dressing room, you fight for a shower, and then they made you work out every night when I got off work, and they made you work on weekends, and they wouldn't let me go home, and this went on, and there were sheriff's officers in there, and there were a lot of women, and they had their guns and their boots, and they really thought they were tough, and here we went. Every morning I'd leave, and they'd inspect my purse, I quit using a purse. I started putting it in a paper bag, because I noticed how dangerous it was. So sometimes I'd be outside waiting for a bus, and these people come up to me and tell me, let me have some money. And I had no way of defending myself. So I told myself, don't wear any jewelry. Don't call any attention to yourself. I had longer hair then. I started wearing it in braids, wore work clothes, and I put all my belongings in a paper bag, hoping that I would draw any attention. Okay, this went on for months and months, and I thought, dear God, if I ever, please let me go home. Well, I wasn't meant to be. I was there by the end of the year, I was still there, and finally they let me out, but they wouldn't allow me to leave that county, because if I did, I had to go back to the jurisdiction of Kern. And so I stayed there, and I would take the bus, I would take the train, I don't care if I had to fly in or beg for a ride, but every weekend I got to Fresno to attend a meeting with a group that I had gotten sober with. Every Friday, and I never missed. And week after week without a license, I managed to leave Fresno, get to work, never miss a day of work, month after month after month. Then it started going into years, and I kept saying, dear God, can't I go home? I just want to go home. And then, what helped me the most, the only thing I can tell you is the most valuable tool that I can think of, you're going to run into in the 10th, 11th, and 12th step. But I'm very fortunate that I got it the first 30 days, and it's from meditation. I cannot underestimate the value of meditation. You know, for some people it's prayer, but I can include the prayer, but I need the meditation. When this gentleman asked me if I prayed before I got up here, and I told him, no, I'm in the now. This is all there is right now. No, I can't go any further than that. For people that have difficulty concentrating, the people that have difficulty with the committee, you've got to learn meditation. You've got to practice it. You've got to try it at least half an hour a day, day after day until you come together. Now, I found this also important when after I worked the first step, which says that I was powerless over alcohol. People, places, and things, and that my life was unmanageable. Now, that's where I ran into trouble, because I thought my life was manageable. I held out a job. I had over 22 years with this big blue-chip company, and I thought, I've always paid my bills. There's nothing unmanageable. Well, the people that have, whose lives are managed, they don't have four drunk driving charges, and they're not in and out of relationships, and they're not divorced every 5 years. There's something wrong with this picture. So then I said, well, you know, maybe my life is unmanageable. So I thought, and I am powerless over alcohol. So when I got to the second step, and it talks about being restored to sanity, that says that you have soundness of mind by that time. So I came to the conclusion that if I had soundness of mind, I should quit debating, I should quit fighting it, I'm an alcoholic, my life is unmanageable, and I'm beginning to find a way to put it back together again. And when they suggested that I work the steps, but don't ever forget this, when I left that recovery program, they told me, I thought, oh, I'm cured. They said, no, if you want insurance, or you want to insure your sobriety, you've got to go to meetings every day. I never forgot that. And I thought, just because I thought I had put my life back together again, didn't mean that I was ready to just enter the world and go back doing the things I used to do. Not only that, but I was very something that happened. Okay. As time went by, I eventually got to be able to come back home again. And I would come back and visit, but I'd still go back to the job. Now it was going into years. I'd already been there 3 years, 4 years, I'm going on 5 years. And one day I finally get to come home. I go back to Kern County, and I realize the little one there has changed, but I have. A lot of people know what has to be doing me because I don't drink anymore. And I was married to a man that said, you know what, you spend too much time over at that club. And he said, I go to too many meetings. And then I told him, doesn't my husband realize that I'm an alcoholic? I'm drunk. He said, I liked you better when you were drinking. And I thought, man, I'm with the wrong man. I better get out of this one or I'm going to start believing him. So I got out of that after 5 or 6 years of sobriety. I left. But at least I warned him. I said, you know what? Come June the 1st, and this is funny, February, I'm going to be leaving. I didn't believe that I did. And I thought, you know what, I found a new way to live.
Right.
And that's all there is to it. And I was never going back to the old life. Not back to the old friends. I just had to find a new family. Okay, but the challenges came not just being able to re-enter society, and I mean outside of my work job. What I found was that I still had to detach, and I still had a lot of problems with my own family. I have two sons, a drug addict and an alcoholic. And that drug addict, so help me God, now that's when I pray. I have watched him the last past 30 or 40 years. I've already spent 27 years incarcerated. In and out of the system. Fighting every way we can to keep him on, not getting that third strike. And this goes on and on. And then the other one is an alcoholic, and there's nothing I can do about it. And I realized that one day when my sister came to me, and, well, actually she didn't come, my other relatives had told her for me to come get her. And I did, and my sister was still drinking. Now, she got 4 drunk driving charges when I did. But she got to stay home because she worked at the county, and she said she found a better lawyer than I had. And so she did weekends. And I thought, now how in the world did that happen? I have more money than her. I'm smarter than her. How come she beat me again? So I was really feeling sorry for myself. But she kept drinking. Her lifestyle never changed. So when I came back and brought her in a group home out on the west outside of Bakersfield, and I came to agree with, I brought her with me, I realized that something was wrong. I asked her to pick up her pants, and she was putting them down. I asked her to put a seatbelt on, and she couldn't. She started crying. They found her wandering around a few months later, and my sister had dementia, which I know came, which I would call a wet brain. So then I told myself, really, who got the better deal with your sister? You would be where she's at right now, because she was 12 months younger than I. You would be where she's at. My sister slipped into a coma, and she laid in a coma for over 3 years because they would not take her off of the respiratory or the sustaining equipment that they had her on. And that made me feel real bad. I was very selfish of them to keep her alive like that because she never knew anyone, and she was just on that feeding tube for years. Now, I was no doubt in my mind that God saved me. I honestly believe that He almost plucked me out of my hometown and took me far away and said, Sylvia, I love you so much. It doesn't mean He did love my sister. But what He said, what God saying is that I love you both, but I'm giving you, but you also have choices. I can't meet you. And that's what's been very hard for me to understand. So I can't save anyone. If I could have saved anyone, I would have saved my sister. If I could save anyone, I would save my son. I help keep the other one out of prison. All I do is keep him from doing, instead of doing life, I keep him just, I give him an opportunity, like doing 4 years coming out, and then doing another 4 years coming out, and it just goes on like that. And the sad part about it is that they still drink and use. And the other thing I want to tell you is that I've had a difficult time letting go over the years. And that's probably been the hardest thing for me. It's been hard for me to detach. And recently I went over to the Beacon House. And I'm glad I sat there and I listened to other people and other groups talk. Because one of the things that they mentioned was that detachment is neither kind nor unkind. It does not imply judgment or condemnation of the person or situation from which we are detaching. It goes on to say, detachment allows us to let go of our obsession with another's behavior and begin to lead happier and more manageable lives with dignity and rights, lives guided by a power greater than ourselves, we can still love the person without liking the behavior. And that's exactly what I've had to learn to do. It's to let go of the obsession with someone else's behavior. It happens to married couples. The people think that detaching just means from your children. No. There are some women that are still obsessed with their husband's behavior or boyfriend's behavior. There are some men that are still obsessed with their girlfriend's behavior. She doesn't act the way I want her to. She won't behave. She won't do what I want her to do. And if you don't learn how to detach, nothing will ever work. You'll never be happy. You can drive. You may be able to stay sober, but you never have your own life. And more than anything in this world, I wanted my life back. I wanted a life to be able to choose and go where I wanted to go. I didn't realize that I was on the right road when I asked for help that night. I went on, and I finished my 30-year working career. I managed to get my pension, and managed to leave, and come back and pick where I wanted to live. I no longer have to go to the place that I call home, because home can be anywhere I hang my hat, wherever I decide to live. I'm a complete person now. I should be able to be happy anywhere. And detaching also can mean at work. There's some people that are going to get on your nerves, but they are who they are. I'm going down the highway, and I know that as I'm going down the highway and these cars are speeding up and I know all the lanes are blocked, that they're going to cut into my lane. I'm so annoyed. I expect it. There's no sense in me getting into it. There's a lot of things that happen I just don't get into. You can tell me off, say anything you want to. I'm not going to react to it. And it's not just because I don't want to go to your level, it's because I'm not sure that your words hurt me. They don't apply to me. You may be talking about yourself, but leave me out of it. That's the reason I'm not careful. I don't want to talk for other people. I tell Bernard certain things and he'll say certain things to me, and then he'll look at me and say, "Are you doing my thinking for me?" And I realize, you can't do someone else's thinking. All you can do is tell what you've done and try to do the best that you can, and there's no sense in arguing. There's just no sense in arguing. And the one thing I detest the most are defensive people. I don't know what there is to defend anymore. I was telling Bill that I go to the bowling alley about 3 times a week, and I say, you know, my knees are giving me trouble, but I don't want to give up bowling. I don't know, I think my quality of life, but I may have to, because I'm at that age. And I thought, well, you know, I never expected to live this long. I just celebrated 29 years, and I'm very lucky. I'm a very, very fortunate person. And what else can I tell you? I'll just talk for a few more minutes and let somebody else talk. Other than detaching, oh man, I'm telling you, it's rough. It is really rough. I have a son that got into trouble with his girlfriend, and today if you guys hit any woman, you better watch out. The law's going to take you in. Spousal abuse is one of the greatest offenses right now due to a few people that have done it and gotten away with it, and a guy fighting for his life right now in Australia, and I'm not going to mention who, and hey, it's serious. You don't want to have any confrontations with the opposite sex. Male or female, don't do it. And it seems that a lot of people have difficulty with their tempers. And the best thing to do is either go take some anger management classes. Oh, and another thing too, I'm a firm believer that anything that's bipolar in here, seek outside help. Mental health is here for a reason. If there's anyone in here still having difficulty with their tempers or other areas, go get some help. AA is not designed to take care of every area. We may think it is, but that's not necessarily true. Otherwise, why would this room be filled with just a few people that I've met over the last past 20, 22 years? Where are the rest of them? And some of the people that are sitting here right now, they probably won't be here next year. You see? just have to make up your mind how badly you want to get sober. And, you know, that's a good way to live, and it's a good way to ensure that you'll have a decent little life a few years down the road. It's a way of putting your life back together again, because no one's going to do it for you. It's a way of being helpful to your fellow man. It's a way of being of living to good purpose. It's a good way to start to appreciate everything that's been given to you. Because a lot of us have had a lot of gifts over the years, but we just never appreciated it. Never. We've taken things for granted. You don't take nothing for granted. You tell people thank you. You tell people excuse me. I don't care who they are. Whether you like them or not. Whether you like the politics or not. And this program was designed to show us that there's a better way to live and that we're all connected. It's a spiritual program. And that's all I am. It's a spiritual being that's connected to a lot of people that came before me. And that I have to leave behind. But I've just been very grateful for this experience.